Good evening, everybody. This is Gordon W2, Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association technical net. This net meets weekly on the Chestnut Ridge 146 955 2-meter repeater. PL is 141.3 or 4A. Is there any emergency or priority traffic? Nothing heard. Excellent. Okie doke. Well, welcome everyone. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association runs a TechNet once a week on this repeater. Purposes of having a conversation. The conversation is about ham radio, electronics, electricity, computers, telecommunications, things in our society that get to use those things. It's a wonderful thing. So hopefully, as my good friend K2RAW would say, you'll want to participate in the 26, I think he says, different kinds of amateur radio, and we can get you to talk about at least one or two of them tonight. The net, as I said, is a conversation, so in order to have a conversation, we need participants. And the way we get participants in this net is a little different than others. While we call it the TechNet, and it is a technical net because it's on here, we need you to sign in whether or not you have a question or a comment. If you have a question or comment, all the better. But if you don't, no worries. We still would like you to check in because it's hard to have a conversation if you don't know who's playing. So, we do check in a somewhat orderly manner, and we do it by amateur radio call sign group. Sorry, with the prefix. So, with no further ado, let's get going. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter Kilo 2, or letter and number Kilo 2, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name. Indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Good evening, Tony. I got you registering a comment. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2BAR. That's K2ZO. And I have no comments or questions at this time.
Frightening. I'm going to start assigning everybody homework to open up QSD Magazine once a month. Anyway, good evening, James. Any other Kilo 2s? How about kilos? Wow, no kilos either. Alrighty. How about whiskeys?
W2JPK, Don with a comment.
Good evening, Don with a comment. Got you squared away. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, with a question.
All right, Charlie, you're the man. Got a question. Good evening to you. Any other whiskeys?
W1AU, none of the above.
Yeah, very good, Bill. Good evening to you as well. Any other whiskeys?
Whiskey 2, LCN, the name here is Rick. No questions, no comments.
Whiskey 2, Lima, Charlie, November, did I get that right? Mr. Rick, it sounds like a new call.
That's correct, Gordon. It's Whiskey 2, Lima, Charlie, November. I switched my call sign to the existing call sign from Sal Catanzo, who was the former resident of this house from a long time ago. It's kind of how I got started in ham radio thing. So I took the call of the guy. Whiskey 2, Lima, Charlie, November.
Wow, your life is full of heritage and stuff. Everything from work to your residence. That's pretty cool. Very neat. All right, very good. Congratulations on the new call. Any other whiskeys?
I decided I have a question, K2ZO.
EX6CAH, yes sir, no comment.
Okay, very good. Jim, I got your question. Who was the other station ending in hotel?
Good evening, Gordon. This is W2-Charlie-XY6-Charlie-Alpha-Hotel. My name is Nestor, and I have no comment.
Okay, very good. Very good, Nestor. W2-Charlie-X-ray-6, I think it was, Charlie Alpha Hotel. Very good. Welcome aboard again. Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right. Any other whiskeys? All righty. How about the ever-popular Alphas? Okay. How about even the more popular Novembers?
NS2K, Jim, no question at this point.
This is King James. Good, good. Any other Novembers?
This is N2OEL with a wonderfully convoluted question. It's going to require you to go online and look up a part number before you can understand the complexity.
Okie dokie. All right. What a treat that's going to be. Everybody get your computers fired up. Any other Novembers? Any call signs, any call sign group, it doesn't matter. K2BAR.
KC2ZMA, Marco, no questions or comments.
Good evening, Marco. Very good. Welcome aboard. Ready. Okay, well, we have a very nice group here tonight. So let's get on with the show. First comment, I'm going to do the two comments first, and then we'll rip through the questions. K2AMI, your comments, sir, K2BAR.
Hey, good evening, Charlie. I went off frequency, I'm back on now. It's K2AMI with the comment, and that is obviously, many people have probably have noticed it, because of weather like today, that may occur over the weekend, we decided to cancel our VHF contest up at Carlson Mountain. But we will be performing a VHF contest from a local area here. Many of the VARA members will be operating. I will be operating from my home station. And there is some information on an email that was sent out. I hope to have one or two volunteers that will help me during my nap time. Unfortunately, I collapsed around about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon for an hour or so, and maybe 2 hours, and hopefully we'll have some volunteers to cover that period. And whenever else I can't hold on to it myself. But I think we'll probably prove that we were right about canceling it. The weather will determine that in the next couple of days. But anybody interested in the VHF contest can bring up topics on this niche or any other source that's convenient for them, email or anything else. So back to Ned.
All right, anybody have questions for Tony about the upcoming VHF contest this weekend? Well, just a little background information for everybody. It starts at 2 p.m. It's 6 meters, 2 meters, 222, 432, and 446. And 03, 1296, 20, 43, 456, 57, 60, and 10 gigs, and anything above 24 gigs, if you can actually muster a signal up there, God bless you. Anyway, that's the upshot of that world. So, with that in mind, Lordy, any questions? I'll just point out that I worked in a couple of stations around Chattanooga this morning, and we're on 6 meters, and yesterday on 2 meters I worked a couple of stations down at FM 07. The one's not on the mountain, just one's in the valley. which was kind of cool, actually. Alrighty. Next up is for a comment is W2JEK. Mr. Don, your comment.
K2PIR, and that's W2JEK. Good evening, everybody. Just reminding everybody, our next Clara V test session will be on Friday night, June 17th, at 7 p.m., and it will be at the Northwood Regional High School. And keep in mind that the general class question pool will change as of July 1st, so if you've been studying the current question pool, you'll have to get to the test session before the end of the month. Either ours or somebody else's, I think there might be one or two others in the area. Might just be convenient, but get there and get the test done, get your studies done, get your testing done. Before the question pool changes. And we will have next test session after that will be in September. The dates are not confirmed yet, but so I can publish on the fire website. I don't know if you can publish the pool. They will be by that time. Not for that, that'll be for changing.
Okay, Don, very good. And the test sessions are at Westwood High School a week from tomorrow, starting at 7 p.m.?
That's correct, 7 p.m.
Very good. Well, I know at least one student who's been studying every day since your last test session at the HamFest. And I don't know what his practice exam stuff is, but the highlighter is out, the book is open, progress is made, et cetera, et cetera. All righty. So, on that note, any questions for Don? All righty. We have three questions tonight. WE2R is our first question. K2BAR.
K2BAR, WE2R. Okay, thanks, Gordon. My question actually goes back to your comment about 6 meters. How do I know when 6 meters is going to open? I'm around the house during the day, but I can't sit at the radio all day. So I was wondering if there's one way to be alerted to a 6 meter opening, or to look into the crystal ball and say it's going to be at such and such a time. How do you keep tuned into what's happening on 6 meters? Back to net, WE2R.
Well, you know, they call it the magic band for a reason. Well, at this time of year, especially with the way it's been the last couple of days, it's a good time to operate. Wouldn't be bad to sit at the radio a bit more. What I can recommend you do, there are a couple of websites that are pretty good, and if you look at those, they're pretty good. Any of the DX cluster sites, and some of them, like DX Summit, you can actually have it send you only the spots for the band you want, and that might be something you could consider doing. So it could tell you maybe on your phone, maybe. Maybe I'm delirious, but that's one thought. Another thought is to, you know, leave a radio on with a wireless device downstairs and kind of just keep like a baby monitor on it or something like that, or old handy talkie on micro milliwatts or something into a dummy loader around your house. Just have something kicking around just to keep an ear on it, something like that. That might be good. Anybody else have any suggestions?
W2JK.
Don?
Okay, I have a Yaesu FT840, which is actually a low-band rig, but I use it with a transmitter.
And this radio has a squelch control on it because it also has the ability, which I don't use and I don't have, is they have an FM module for a 10-meter FM. And because it has a squelch control, I can sit there and monitor the calling frequency, 50.125. I think if anything's happening, the calling frequency will have enough activity that'll break the squelch and give me some indication that something's happening. So if you have that ability, that's a way to have the loudspeaker won't be roaring white noise all the time, but if something does happen, the squelch will be broken and you'll hear the activity. So that's another possible way of doing it. Over.
Okay, very good. Any any additional thoughts? That's a very good one, by the way.
W2CH.
W2CH, go ahead and give us your name, please.
Yes, this is William White Plains, occasionally check-in. In 6 meters this weekend is the VHF QSO party, so this might be a good opportunity for seeing how the band is.
From your mouth to God's ears, Wayne. yep, absolutely. Good idea. Absolutely great idea. VHF contest starts at 2 p.m. on Saturday and goes to 11 p.m. on Sunday night. And, you know, I think the Don's idea of using the squelch on a 40 in his case is a good solution. For the strong openings, for the weak openings, not going to quite work. But, you know, better some than none, right? Also, if it starts chirping a little bit, even if you don't get full words, it could suggest to you that the band's open, it's time to run down the stairs. So, as you see fit. The other thing, Charlie, is where is your ham shack in your house? I mean, last I checked, your house has plenty of space, and you have sole discretion as to where your ham shack is. So why is it not convenient?
The ham shack is up on the second floor. It sort of shares a room with my home office. So I do spend a lot of time in it. But, you know, I also spend a lot of time wandering around and downstairs and outside. I suppose I could take Don's suggestion, turn up the squelch and turn up the volume real high. And probably hear it around the house that way. We'll hear some commotion. But, yeah, I spend a fair amount of time on it. I that's another issue. The radios distract me from my work, and my work distracts me from my radios. Good argument to keeping them separate. Back to that, WE2R.
Oh, I don't know. I've had a ham shack in my office, my home office, for the last 25 years, and it's been okay. What amazes me sometimes is that I have to turn down the volume. I mean, there were times when my radios were all on all day and the volumes were down. I never had a chance to turn them up because it was just too much of a pressure cooker in the way of work, so sometimes that happens. This morning, I had a pressure cooker environment, but I didn't require a lot of telephony activity, so, and yesterday morning as well, so I was able to take a minute here, a minute there, and operate a couple of contacts. Anybody else have comments?
K2BAR, KC2RX, checking in, Gordon.
Okay. Very good, Bob. Thank you, by the way, for your participation last weekend. Get to that in a minute. Alrighty. Anybody else?
What time did you catch those band openings, Gordon?
This morning was around 9:30. It was a little late, actually. Actually, in this time of year, where it's more heat driven, you know, band openings happen all day. In fact, in recent days, the bands have been open pretty consistently, you know, around the clock, just not every minute around the clock. You'll get hot spots to propagation. So if someone in location X has a, you know, communications path to location Y and somebody calls CQ, then you're good to go. One of the problems with 6 meters, and the 10 meter operators have a similar problem, is that everybody is intently listening to a dead band. No one's calling. If you don't call, you don't get.
Yeah, I got to keep that in mind. I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, well, people used to hate it when I had a voice gear, and that was a shame because I had 4 voice gears on 4 different radios, and one time someone said to me, how do you call CQ on 6 meters, and as soon as you stop calling on 6 meters, you call exactly the same way on 2 meters, and then someone figured out they do the same thing on 432 or FM or 220, or 220. And the reason was I had 4 identical voice gears programmed the same way with exactly the same CQ, same technology. They were same. I made 4 voice gears from kits years ago, and I would just sequence them kind of like a piano player, you know. And these guys are going, well, I don't listen to Gordon call CQ on 6 meters, so I'll go to 2 meters. And by God, I would be calling CQ on 2 meters as well. And they'd be like, how does that? And the answer was, that's how come I have so many contacts. I mean, by the way, just for grins, I do not have VUCC because I've never bothered to file for it. Scary thought as that may be. Anybody else have comments?
That's 2JEK.
Donald?
Yeah, one thing. With my Yaesu here, and I use this with the Pentec transmitter, I have the A and B VFO switch on the Yaesu set up for the exact frequency. This is 14.125, which it becomes 50.125 on the 6 meter band. And I can be running, let's say, low frequency, but periodically I just, something's a little slack there. I hit the AB switch, go from HF to the 14.125, put the switch on the transmitter, which changes the antenna, and I'll run up and down the band, because not everybody, when this thing happens, is going to be up on the calling frequency. They'll be up, if it starts, you don't catch it on something on the calling frequency. They usually start running stations. Somebody's running stations. Okay, let's say out in Minnesota starts running stations. He's not going to run on the calling frequency. He's going to move up to some other frequency. So the thing to do is, what I usually do is I flip it up to, put on it, turn it up to 6 meters. I scan the band, run the band up the, just crank the knob until I get up to about 50.200, crank down again, and usually sometimes what I'll crank down to the bottom end of the band in the CW portion, and usually listen for the beacon that's around 50.066 or whatever it is, the W2 beacon and the Mario runs. And then from there I'll crank it back again. Also listening for other beacons and any CW stations that might happen to be operating in that 50.070 to 50.100. Also the DX band is 50.100 to 50.125. You might find a DX station in there as well. So, you know, every once in a while run the... crank your dial and listen for other activity if you have a minute to do that. And as I said, it takes another hit a couple switches and I'm back onto HF in my case, but there's no activity. Come back later. Sometimes these openings only last a few minutes too, maybe 10, 15 minutes. There's some short EV these kip openings are only short openings sometimes. Other times they last for hours. It all depends on the particular incident. Back to that, W2JK.
Yep, okay. That's all good. Anybody else have comments? Okay, well, you know, one of the things I do miss on my Pro 3 and my Pro 2 is having the spectrum scope, because you're right, I could spot activity up and down the band, and that was very, very useful. In fact, I developed a bit of an eye for even small signals. They had a different rhythm than noise bursts and things like that. That reminds me, tomorrow I gotta rattle somebody's cage to find out where my Flex 5000 is. Actually, I know where the Flex 5000 is. I need to know where the laptop to go with it is, because they're shipping them together, and one got shipped to Hoffman Estates, Illinois, and the other one got shipped to Chicago, Illinois, and somebody's responsible for integrating it all together, putting it in kits, and shipping it to me. Clearly, they have not done that. And I am wildly disappointed. It's taken so long, it's like 2 months now. It's ridiculous. But anyway, I have this 746 Pro, and I have a 7000, so it's not like I'm rigless, so we'll be all good. Anybody else have any further comments?
W2KK again.
Don, go.
One thing I did with my Yaesu, I set up in the memories 50.125, 130, 135, 140. The hams tend to go in 5 KC multiples. So set up a whole bunch of memories, like 50.150, or although every 5 you have enough memory, just use hold them in and put your rig in a scan condition, and see if that'll if something's happening, you probably hit on it with the scan condition. That's another possibility. You could do that. So you could scan from 50.125 to 50.200, and you know, in a few seconds the scanner would pick up. Something was happening. It would pick up on one of those frequencies usually. Although I realize some people do operate off a little frequency, but that's usually on a 5 KC multiple. This is something Tony K2AMI told us years ago, and I have to give him credit for that. Back to net, W2JEK.
Okay, anybody else? Well, that's a good idea, storing the frequencies in memory is a good idea. I might be inclined to put some splinters in there, and especially if they're tunable memories, I might be inclined to do that. But very good. Very, very good. That's neat. Anybody else? Subject to 6 meters.
WGK again. I have one other thought on that.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, in December, I usually operate the 10-meter contest, the ARL's 10-meter contest. It's usually the first Saturday and Sunday in September, December. And it's a period of e-skip also. And I know one day I was operating 10 meters, and you know, it was mostly ground wave stuff, working the guy up at the limit of my ground wave. I could hardly hear him, and he could hardly hear me, but we made a couple contacts away, and all of a sudden the W2 comes in roaring loud. I worked him, and he's in Florida. I worked another W2, or it was a station that was loud. He was in Florida. So I flipped on to 6 meters, and sure enough, there was an opening there. So if you're on, let's say, 10 meters, and you hear stuff that is not, that you hear each skip station on 10 meters, start looking at 6 meters. That's another possibility. As a matter of fact, I work it no good that way. Back to net, W2JK.
Okie dokie. Good idea. Any other comments?
KB2AWC timeout.
Well, with that in mind, Let's see, where else do we have to go? We have, Jim Joyce sent me something that I wanted to comment on, because it's apropos of the subject. Jim, is this something you want to bring up later, or is this something you want to discuss now?
No, I just was curious. Did anybody see any aurora last night? I didn't really look. But that solar flare is going to do some strange things this weekend.
Yeah, I think that the propagation of that solar flare is going to be a bit of fun for a period of days. My guess is if we didn't have the lightning and thunder tonight, you'd probably, and the cloud cover, you'd probably be able to see stuff. They're talking about the late hours last night and the night before, tonight and last night. So we'll see. Aurora contacts, I didn't hear any aurora on 6 meters when I was in there earlier, but aurora sounds like a buzzsaw or like a whisper, and it makes phone conversation, meaning voice, virtually impossible. So that's something to think about as well, that it's, you have to use essentially CW. That's pretty much the only thing you have left, because the distortion is just so high. The way I would characterize aurora is you have the sun throwing out all sorts of cosmic rays, disrupting the Earth's magnetic field, causing lots of charged ions to exist in the northern and southern climates near the poles, where the magnetosphere concentrates those forces. In so doing, it creates clouds that perturbate or scintillate. And the way I give you a simple solution to understand, let me drop it. Aurora does to a radio signal sort of like what a mirror does, with an exception. The mirror is nice and neat. So let's say I use a piece of shiny aluminum foil, and I pull it out nice and neatly and hang it somewhere, and I look at my image, and I see the reflection of my image in it, a reflection of whatever it is I'm looking at in that aluminum mirror. And if I hold it nice and still, everything's working good, there's no distortion, I don't feel like I've gone to a carnival mirror or something like that. Instead, you take that piece of aluminum foil, that shiny aluminum foil, crunch it up, take it really carefully and uncrunch it and smooth out as best you can. And now it's got all these little facets and disruptions and things like that. Then, randomly, I want you to imagine that every one of the pieces of that, or every facet of that piece of aluminum foil can be in motion. Jittering around in space. It's still reflecting, but man, you can't see a coherent visual image in it, and that's pretty much what it does to radio waves. So the reflections come back out of phase and things like that, so it's just a distorted mess. And literally worse, I mean, much, much worse than a carnival mirror. Or funhouse mirror. It really looks crazy. It looks literally like you crunched up a piece of aluminum foil and set it in motion, jittering it around in space, and then you wonder why, that there's no coherence to what's reflected off of it. You'll get a signal reflected off of it, but it's not going to be coherent. Anybody have any questions about aurora?
WE2R.
Charlie.
This came up in a boating context, but with the rises of solar activity and the solar flare, and everybody's got a GPS these days, I wonder how that affects people's GPS receivers. I'm just picturing taxicabs crashing into each other and people driving off the road. I just wonder if it has any effect on that.
Well, the aurora doesn't, but the solar flare certainly would. And a strong enough solar flare or a coronal mass ejection poisoned my troop. It seemed to like that for some reason. I don't know why. They're teenage boys. But even a coronal mass ejection, that is so disruptive that if it sent a high-energy particle stream and whacked a satellite, it would not just disrupt the electronics, it could fry them. It could literally turn it into, shall we say, space junk.
So does that ever happen? Has anybody noted the GPS is going crazy?
Well, your GPS wouldn't go crazy because, well, I mean, theoretically, yes, you could have the receivers go crazy as well, but in the relatively unshielded, you know, confines of space, the transmitters are more, and their electronics are more at risk than your receiver here on Earth protected by the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, so if the transmitters malfunction, that means the receivers aren't going to receive what they ought to be receiving.
Right, so when you first turn on your GPS, you have nothing, so that's what you'd have in a worst-case scenario.
All right, well, I guess we all have to just hold on to our old-fashioned compasses, just in case.
More importantly, you actually have to remember directions, and you have to remember how to read a map, and you might even need a compass, yes. You know, I get a pretty good sense where things are, you know, in proportion to other. I mean, I'm one of those crazy people who actually reads maps, and today, map reading is a pleasure because you can do it with a street map, you can do it with a topo, you can do a topo with street overlays, you can do bird's eye view, you can do satellite view, I mean, you can do ground level view. I mean, God, you know, there's so many different ways to view maps today, you know, online. And if you want, you can print them and hold them in your hand and study them and, you know, get a sense of proportion and, you know, it's just marvelous. I mean, when I think about, let me drop it. When I think about in the early 70s when I was in high school, in my military science class at Xavier, you know, one of the units for several months was map reading, and it was novel to have photo maps, aerial maps of an area. And you know, if you, I forget what the training manual was, but the training manual that taught us map reading was what do you call it? You know, came with an insert that folded out, and it was a topo map of Fort Benning and environs, and that was pretty cool. And one side was topo, and the other side was photo. It was the same area. It was marvelous. What a great way to learn. You know, so to this day, I can read a photo map and identify things on the ground much more readily than most people can. My guess is that population of people who can read aerial maps has probably improved greatly with the advent of the Internet. It's a great thing. Anybody have any comments?
2K.
Mr. Jim.
So, can you see the 3D stereoscopic photographs without the aid of a viewer?
No, and it's funny you should mention that, but the manual came with some printed maps that were in on the pages. They were full size. You know, these were like workbook size, you know, training manuals, and they did have stereoscopic imagery in there, and they did include a, you know, the funky glasses in cardboard that you had to bend up, and so, you know, you had a bunch of, you know, freshmen, you know, high school freshmen males, you know, just finding way too much fun with this.
Yeah, my roommate at one point was studying Sylvics, so one of the things that he had to do was study available around the room. And I got to be at least fairly good, you know, 50 years ago, at being able to see these things in 3D without the aid of the glasses or any other viewer.
That's cool. That's really, really cool. I was never good enough to do that. The irony for me was I had to wear them over my glasses because while I was severely nearsighted in both eyes, there was a significant imbalance between the two, so there was no way for my brain to compensate for it. It was really a mess. So it became difficult. Since I had the cataract surgery 7 years ago, it's been much easier because now my glasses are, you know, I mean, I forget what I have. I think I have, 2.25 diopter, you know, prescriptions. I mean, that's not, if they're that much, not even 2.25. It's 150 and 2.25, 150 and 175. I forget what they are. I have to go look.
Very good. As opposed to, what, a 4 and an 8 or something that you had before?
8? 4? No. How about 9 and 11, 5?
Ooh, I thought I was bad. Anyway, let's get back to the stream here. NS2K.
Alrighty. So any more about this topic, about the solar flare, its impact on the aurora? By the way, you'll also have other activity that's non-auroral in nature because, remember, all that energy is hitting the ionosphere and it adds to the charge level. And, you know, anytime you excite the ionosphere and you have all those free ions kicking around, you have a more reflective, shall we say, environment in which to bounce signals. And as long as they're not in the polar regions, i.e. near aurora, they work pretty well. There's not a lot of distortion in them. They're pretty clean. So when they get into the polar regions is when you get the distortion that's emblematic of an aurora, is the magnetic concentrations, the poles. So that's one other thing I did want to mention to folks. So this is your month. This is like a huge, huge, great time to operate. So morning, noon, afternoon. Basically, take some morning, take some noon time, take some pre-dinner time. And go to town. In fact, I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen any European propagation because that should be coming in about now too. So in the mornings point toward Europe and the like, and you might be pleasantly surprised. Alrighty. Any other mysteries that we want to uncover on the subject of propagation? All right, I'll take more check-ins and then we'll go to Noel's question. Any other check-ins, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KB2, Mark Casey.
The Kilo Bravo 2, Romeo Quebec Victor.
Negative, sir. Romeo Kilo Zebra. The prefix, the suffix is RKT.
Romeo Kilo Zulu. Okay, very good. What is your name, and do you have a question or comment for that you want to let us know about?
My name is Bill. We're down here in Waterford, New Jersey, in the middle of the Pine Barrens, right on the border of Camden and Atlantic County. And now, just thought I'd check in and say hello. No questions, no comments.
Very good, Bill. Did you check into this net last year about the same time?
I wouldn't know. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think you did. Well, Mr. Peters in Alpine, New Jersey. It is 5 minutes
or less, actually. It's probably like 3 minutes from the New York line along the Hudson River on top of the Palisades. So if you're in Waterford, you're a good 80 miles or 90 miles from the repeater.
The fact that the weather is so unstable, I think, helps. Of course, I normally get this machine pretty consistently. Usually 5 or 6 generally down here. It's coming a little bit more tonight, but that's because probably the weather. I may have some ducting or whatever, but you guys are sounding good down here anyway. Nice and loud tonight.
Well, that's excellent. Well, thank you very much. That's pretty cool. I'm just trying to see. It looks to me as though the rain front is forming a northeast to southwest line that goes from just west of here to just west of Philadelphia, and down into the like northeast the town of Northeast Maryland. Through Newcastle and that area of the world, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was a trailing edge trough there of warm meets cold. You can see it in the weather map pretty plainly. Alrighty, very good. Well, nice to hear you again, and thanks for checking in again, Mr. Bill. Anybody else have questions? Alrighty. Then let's get on with Noel's question. It's OEL, the part number, and then the question.
Okay, part number 18136-PS. Company's name is Marlin, M-A-R-L-I-N, space, the letter P, period, Jones and Associates. The item is a 12-volt at 3.5 amps, DC to DC converter. Specifications input 10 to 30 volt DC, 24 volt nominal. Maximum output 45 watts. DC input switching supply 0.5% line regulation, 1% load regulation, 1% peak to peak maximum noise or ripple. $9.95.
Okay, Duke. So, to make sure I get the part number right, because you didn't use phonetics and it was driving me crazy. So, it's 18136-Papa Sierra Marlin P. Jones and Associates?
Yes. Okay. Now, what this has to do is, remember my batteries, the ones that I have that used to power a wheelchair?
Yes.
Well, what happens is, I found that over time, they still have pretty much their original capacity, at least 80%. But what happens is, the internal resistance starts going up. So if you are drawing, you know, a few milliamps or an amp, they're fine. You try to draw 10 amps, or in the case when you're in a scooter, 20 or 25, the internal resistance has reached a point that the voltage drop is excessive, and they're no longer suited for power in a scooter. So I've been using them as supplies for electronics. You took them and you put 4 of them and used them with your HF transceiver.
Okay,
so now the internal resistance has gone up. It may be as much as 3 or 4 times the internal resistance when the battery's new, 9 years ago. I mean, I've had these for a while. Okay, so now you got a battery with the internal resistance going up, and I want to use them, for instance, to power an HT, my HT, which draws about an amp. Okay, now, one way to do it is to put a couple of them in parallel. Problem is, of course, over time, they've deteriorated. Nominal voltage might be 12.57. The other one, nominal voltage, might be 12.79. So So what happens is, if I hook them together in parallel, the higher voltage one will start discharging into the lower voltage one. One way, of course, to prevent that is with a regular diode or a Schottky diode on each of the power supplies and put them in parallel. Then, of course, you have diode loss. What I was thinking is, I could take one of these little power supplies, which may be 90% efficient or so, who knows, put the two batteries in series. No, I no longer have to worry about diode drop, diode loss. And I don't have to worry about one discharging into the other. I may pay for my series, I may have to pay for using the DC-to-DC converter with the associated loss. The question I have is, since the loss in internal resistance is I squared R, and by going, putting this series, I now have less current, I think, would it make sense, and also my output voltage will now be constant?
Yes, it will.
Ah, but I want the pontification as to why it makes sense to use this DC to DC converter as opposed to hooking up the HT directly to two batteries.
Well, when you say hooking the HT directly to two batteries, you mean putting them in parallel and just toughing it out with the load balancing, right?
You'd either have to put them in parallel directly or through a pair of diodes.
Okay, well, from a cost viewpoint, this power supply seems to be fairly reasonable for the application you're trying to use. Does a 5-watt HT really pull down so much current out of a single battery as to really suffer the deleterious effects of the increased internal resistance of the battery?
Probably not, but I was thinking in the future of running a 100-watt transceiver, in which case it's the same thing, but the numbers will be bigger.
Well, this power supply here is rated for an output of 3.8 amps at 12 volts. You're not going to run a 100-watt transceiver. You're going to run a 20-watt transceiver off of this. Maybe.
True, but if I went to these power supplies come up surplus quite often, and they're all different ones, there's a lot of them used on boats. I happen to have a different one that does 15 amps that I bought at a bear auction a couple years back. It weighs about 20 pounds. It's in a box. It's green. I didn't know what it was. I said, I like the box. And I bought it for $8. Get home, look up the part number, and it turns out that it runs anywhere from 20 to 40 volts. So it'll run on a 24-volt system or a 36-volt, put out 15 amps. So it's the same question. It's just a, you know, you could have it on an HT on a small one, or you could use the big one. The question is, in the long run, would you be better off feeding the two batteries through something that has 10% loss, or 8% loss, I think it's got its 92% efficiency, or would you be better off paralleling them and hoping for the best?
There's a third option. That he used to use the power supply, use the batteries independently and just swap them out and give one, when you want to recharge it, you know, charge it kind of like with a jolt charger of some sort just to get it moving. You can do that, you know, at least in limited doses. Something to think about.
Okay, let's say, for example, I want to draw 15 amps from my HF grid. These batteries, the internal resistance is up. When I try to draw, when I try to use them in a scooter application, the voltage drops rapidly. supposed to be 24 volts, and my little thing that's a voltmeter that says gas supply or power meter drops way down. So my assumption is that the internal resistance has gone up. So my question is, if we're drawing for a radio, 15 amps, and you're losing a lot of power in that internal resistance, which may even, the radio may not work, assume the radio works. I'm going to be drawn, and I have I squared R loss of 15 amps. Meanwhile, if I put two of these batteries in series, run it through my device, which is 92% efficient, and now instead of drawing 15 amps from each battery, at one at a time, I have both in series. I'm going to draw the same current from each battery because they're in series. They're not going to discharge in each other. But what I would have is the loss of the device, which is approximately 8%. But I have less I squared R loss, I think, because it's one quarter the current. No, it's one half. So it's half the current, but one quarter the loss, but times two batteries, so it'd be half the loss, I think. How's my math?
I would think it's a quarter of the loss, but okay. Yeah, I mean, it'll certainly work, but I can't seem to find on their website bigger power supplies. Having said that, however, this is a very neat company. So what I think we want to draw people's attention to is the website on a more generic basis. It's MikePapaJulietAlpha.com. What a neat company with all sorts of toys. And cheap. It's just like the Harbor Freight of surplus electronics.
Oh, yes.
Switches, lighted, alligator clip, transformers, all sorts of computer power supplies, 24-volt DC running time meter, lighted push-button switches, huge selection, cable tracer, LED panel meters, LED lamps, bench supplies. I mean, it's like the toy store for hams.
Yeah. I'm seeing Variax, you know, 2 kVA Variax for $100, 500 volt amp, a 110 one for $50. Not bad. I mean, you know, if you can't find one at Hamfest, you need one. That's not too bad. If you want to bring a radio back to life, you're doing some boat anchor repair and you want to, you know, start, you know, lighting up some old capacitors and don't want to have a explosive experience. They have transformers here, raw transformers, power transformers, what a concept. They had something on their one page, which is, it was kind of neat, a 1-inch rack panel chassis, 19-inch rack panel chassis, with a cover. It's basically, it's an entire, you know, six-sided box with ears, inch or so high. I can think of lots of projects I would have loved to have that in there. So that's all very, very good. A 19-volt, power supply for a laptop. You know, all good. Very good. Good stuff. All righty, anybody else?
WA2ZOZ.
Okay, Whiskey Alpha 2, Zulu, Oscar Zulu, is it?
Okay, affirmative. Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for letting me break in. I am using one of those new Chinese HTs. It's not a Waxon, it's a TYT model uniform Victor Foxtrot 1. I understand that the audio on these things sounds a bit nasally, and I'd like to get an audio report from you on this new transceiver on this new HT.